Welcome to the Renewables Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams in the renewable sector. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent across the continuum from concept through commercialization and beyond in areas like energy storage, electric vehicles, hydrogen, solar, wind, and more. Here's your co-hosts, Mitch Robbins and Adam Soppy.
Hey there, welcome back to another episode of Renewables Talent Lab. This is Adam Soppy, Principal Talent Advisor here with the Anthony Michael Group. Lots to cover, so very excited to have with us Zoe Gamble. You probably know Zoe as the President of Clean Choice Energy, has served in that role for a little over 2 years. And prior to that, she served as a Chief Executive Officer at Pine Gates Renewable, held big titles like General Counsel at FLS Energy and others, JD and Masters of Environmental Law and Policy from Vermont Law and Graduate School. Passions include yoga, meditation, hiking, writing. We joked offline, you know, she has five kids and a dog. So hence probably the power of meditation and hiking and yoga and, you know, staying centered. I have two kids and I have a bunch of gray hair from that. So I can't even imagine having five. So very honored to have you, Zoe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Adam. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've got a lot to cover, and I want to be mindful of your time, but I think the audience is going to get so much value from this. One topic that I'm really excited to ask your perspective on is women in leadership. I won't get us too far off track with my soapbox, but it's a myth, obviously, here in the United States in general. And then I think within renewable energy, it's underserved, and we're really failing ourselves as a society and as an industry by not, you know, with our numbers where they're at right now. So, I mean, it seems like a naive question, but why is it so important to champion women and diverse voices in the workplace, especially within our space, you know, the clean energy space?
Yeah, you know, that's really the million-dollar question, right? It is when I think about women in leadership or any other kind of diversity in leadership, one of the things that comes to mind, my husband is actually in a coaching program. So he's getting certified as a coach. And they were going through this distinction of assertion versus assessment. And so an assertion, he's 6'3", an assessment, he's tall, right? And so an assertion lives in the world of fact, and an assessment is an interpretation, a story about what's happening. And we all dwell in the domain of assessments. Like, we're constantly assessing. That's what we do. And our background and life experiences shape the way in which we both assess problems and see solutions. And when we have a work environment with a diversity of experiences, and I mean diversity of experiences, whether it's socioeconomic, racial, gender, you know, any of these backgrounds help shape the way that we identify problems and how we solve them. So ultimately, you're going to get a better outcome. So really, it's about performance, but it's also about having a more creative workspace.
Yeah, it is. And that's an interesting. So assertion versus assessment. We were fortunate to have Mike Crosby from Career Vault on. He's the talent acquisition leader there. And we talked a little bit about, you know, buzzwords on applications for job applications, rock star and things that have been around for a long time. And the data is showing it's deterring females from applying. And also, just in general, guys, probably the machismo or whatever, we're naive knuckleheads. And we're like, yeah, I could do that job. I could be a senior vice president of whatever. And we'll apply for a role. Whereas it's females just historically are all kind of self-selecting out. And so that's a systemic problem that we're facing. And, you know, I have two nieces that they're kicking butt. And, you know, we see that a lot of time and time again, where the STEM program, you know, girls are doing really well. And then at some point they're pushed off course. And now they don't end up as engineers in the United States, or they don't end up in leadership roles, which is probably a whole another show. But could you maybe share your career journey? You know, what's your origin story? How did you get here?
Yeah. So just to touch back on the point that you just made, one of the things that I often sometimes talk about is the trust equation, that if you're familiar with the concept of the trust equation, credibility plus reliability plus authenticity divided by perceptions of self-interest. And so one of the things that women sometimes bump up against right away is credibility. And so there can be an automatic perception that isn't even, that's in that assessment. The person who is has the power and is making the decision about whether to hire a particular person for a role, they may have an unconscious assessment that this person is less credible than the other candidate. Or women often are expected to be helpers. And so if you're advocating for yourself in a role, it bumps up against perceptions of self-interest. So a woman that is negotiating for herself versus a man who's negotiating for himself is going to run into a bias around, or an assessment around, that self-interest. And so I say that to say that one of the things that women can do as they're leaning into opportunities is to be aware that that might be happening and make sure that you're increasing the reliability calculation, that you're showing up in a way that is projecting credibility to overcome those assessments. And the last thing that we can really do is authenticity. Like, just being honest and vulnerable is a really easy knob to turn up in terms of building trust and belief in your capacity to do the job. So my career, I do not have a typical career path. I came from a really small town and I wanted out as fast as I could. So I dropped out of high school. I got my GED and I moved to Austin, Texas, and I got my, wow. I started off in community college. So it would have been my junior and senior year of high school. I did my first 2 years of college in community college. And then I transferred, finished university. And, that was the right path for me. It also meant that I was done with college at 20. And so I moved to New York City and I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I kind of walked around asking everybody I could, what should I do? What's my purpose? Why am I here? And I had this friend of mine that got tired of me saying the same thing over and over again. And he sat me down at lunch and he was like, Zoe, God's not going to rain purpose down on you. You have to find a direction and just start walking. And that prompted some introspection about what matters most to me and where I find my greatest self-expression. And I knew that what I really wanted was to make a difference and to matter. And that an area of life that I love is the natural world. I've always felt closest to spirit and myself when I'm out in the trees and listening to the wind and the breeze. And I felt a passion for wanting to protect that. And so I found the Vermont Law School, which is the number one environmental law program in the country. I had grand visions of being like Aaron Brockovich and defending, the side of justice and wearing the white hat. So I went to law school. And while I was at law school, what I found is that the most important issue of our time is climate change, and that energy is a major driver of that. And so I kind of stumbled into being interested in energy. Well, fast forward, like many new graduates of law school, I needed a job to pay my law school loans. And so I was lucky in that I landed in North Carolina, which was about to become a state where it was exploding in renewable energy. And I ended up at a law firm that specialized in project finance for low-income housing tax equity. So they did tax equity deals, but for low-income housing and historic properties. And while I was there, I learned the sort of art and science of project finance using tax equity. I don't think I really appreciated that was setting me up to be able to be one of the first attorneys in the state that did tax equity financing for renewable energy in North Carolina. So it closed on the first fund that happened here in North Carolina for FLS, who was my client at the time, and started a renewable energy practice. And decided at some point that I wanted to go in-house. And when I went in-house, my career trajectory sort of tilted more towards the business side of building solar power.
Wow. That's an amazing story. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. And it's a lot of, I think, good advice. And to folks out there that don't have that career path right now, it's not clear to them. They don't, maybe they even don't have the guidance or mentorship at their current organization or their current situation. This is really good advice. And I think as a parent, I think I'm guilty of it as well. But it seems like we want to be on that path, from age 5 on.
Oh, yeah.
And to be like, I'm dropping out, getting my GED, I'm moving to Austin, Texas, then I'm moving to New York City. And if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. And then, doors open for you. And you had mentioned being lucky or being fortunate. I think you create a lot of your own luck. So I'm sure it was a lot of hard work, a lot of putting yourself in the right situations. But I think that's an amazing story. And it's good advice, or it's good maybe for people to hear that.
I tell that story vulnerably because most people don't want, you know, we all want to have the story that we graduated valedictorian of our high school and went to the right college. And it can become a trap in believing that if we don't have those credentials, that doors are not open for us. And it's part of the story of our society, and it's just not true. You know, and I say, and I look at that, and my own children, you know, I send them to private school, and they're kind of on the path of what traditional success looks like. It's fun to see my daughter sort of say, I don't think I want this. I'm going to go leave and go live in France for a year and do a, you know, study abroad program, right? It's but I want my story to give other people permission to have not followed a traditional path, because there's lots of contributions that can be made without that.
Heck yeah. I mean, obviously, look where you're at today. And that's an amazing message to a lot of people. One question I have for you, I guess, is you're an overachiever. It's obvious. How do you do everything there? And then also, we had talked about, you have five kids, you know, so some of it, and I've been guilty of it as well, working 100-hour weeks, all in on certain things like career, and then my relationships, family, friends, you know, everything else suffers. How do you balance everything? How do you balance? I know work-life balance is I kind of roll my eyes when I hear it sometimes because it is a buzzword like culture, like some of the others that have been hijacked, I think, over the years. But, you know, how do you achieve this much success without really sacrificing the quality and time you spend with your family?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer that in two different ways. So the first one is I've got some hot tips. Right? I've said this on a panel and it resonated with me when I said it, which is don't sacrifice your career for laundry. So, you know, it's like, and the other thing that goes hand in hand with that is don't let perfect be the destination. And when we can give up some of these unnecessary standards and ideals, it really does free up some room and space to be able to take on more. The other thing I'm going to say is about presence. Because we all waste a lot of time not being present. And I recently had opportunity to go with the family. We went sea kayaking around Vargas Island in Vancouver. So we were 5 days, no cell phone technology. We didn't see other people for 5 days.
Wow.
And the amount of connection and fun and play and joy that was present because we were right there with each other. I hold it as a center for my spirit, you know, in those moments when I'm feeling the chaos of life, because it's available. We just have to be willing to set down our phones and to cultivate the inside job of being present for where we are. The other day, I was taking just a few minutes to walk outside and it just took 10 minutes. And there was, you know, quality of being that was available from looking deeply into the leaves of the trees, you know, walking slowly and intentionally, breathing, being here. And I was able to come in and deal with the chaos of all the kids and make dinner and have fun and not be thinking about whatever problem I've got going on at work.
That's a powerful message. As we record this mid-May, one of the news stories is a certain football player who just did a commencement speech. So I will go there, but it's a nice counter message to that. And I love the line, don't give up success for laundry and, you know, and things like that. Awesome message. The sea kayaking in Vancouver is bittersweet to hear. My wife and I went to Vancouver right shortly before COVID, and we were supposed to do the seaplane, dropping us in, do just that, orcas, all these amazing things. Long story short, we were there and they didn't have enough crew to come out. They were wrapping up the season at the time and we didn't get to go. And it's like one of my life's regrets. And I dearly want to get back and do that because I had a hunch it was going to be amazing. And then you just said, you know, 5 days of truly being connected with nature. I mean, there's so much data on that as well. Like listen to the, you know, Huberman Lab podcast with Andrew Huberman and others where it's very, very clear. We need to recenter. Foresting is a thing. And, you know, and just being throwing your darn phone in the drawer or leaving in the hotel room or whatever and just get out and really be present. So that's amazing. I want to be mindful of our time. We have so much to cover. One question that I get as a recruiter daily, if for sure weekly, if not daily, is I'm in XYZ industry right now. Maybe it's a highly regulated area like, you know, med tech or aerospace or automotive or something else. I'm passionate about renewable energy. How do I make that pivot? And I've talked to folks at renewable energy companies. Some are less open-minded to it. Nope, that's going to be too steep of a learning curve or whatever the case is, especially maybe in a sales role. But some folks are saying, yeah, if you've done this, this, and this, that can translate well and maybe flatten out a learning curve. Or here's what you could potentially do to position yourself, you know, to make that move. Do you have any thoughts there on a non-traditional path into renewable energy?
Yeah. So there's different parts of renewable energy, right? It's a diverse, really a whole subset of the economy, right? You have manufacturing, you have sales, you have project finance, there's development there. In Clean Choice, we're a retail electric provider. So there's marketing and tech and customer interface and operations. So I think that that's an important thing to keep in mind is just because you may not be working for a renewable energy developer or an IPP, there's a whole world of other parts of the industry that are supporting that. So, I mean, at Clean Choice, our marketing and our technology in particular have people that come over from all types of different backgrounds and industries. And when we think about the more traditional, what I have been doing for the past 15 years, which is develop, finance, build, own, operate renewable energy power plants, the skill sets that lend themselves to transitioning over are real estate. So I mentioned that I got my start doing low-income housing tax equity deals. That was very translatable skill set because you're talking about similar project finance structures and similar documentation, similar set of rules, counting, that kind of a thing. The other would be development. So I see folks coming over that are doing land acquisition that were doing land management for oil and gas companies. Right? That's an easy transition. The folks that have accounting experience, so much in the domain of accounting and FP&A is a transferable skill. There are some specialized pieces, but it's learnable. The other way would be in the parts of the business that support development. So for example, an environmental consultant. You're an environmental consultant that is expert on wetlands or other kinds of permitting activities. That is something that a lot of solar developers can use. The experience set with going in front of zoning boards and getting a project rezoned, community engagement. How do you make sure that the county planning commission is appropriately processing your project? Those are all transferable skills.
That's great to hear. Yeah, that really is, because there's a lot of people out there. And I was talking with David Jones in Chicago at Lumen Energy, and I think he'd quoted almost 10 million people that we're going to need in our sector, in our industry in the very near future. So it's like, wow, how do we, that math is daunting. How do we get people there? And it sounds like people can make that.
Oh, yeah.
That
well,
move.
I didn't even touch on engineering and construction. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Awesome. You had mentioned project finance a few times, and I'll be real transparent. It's well over my pay grade. Like you, I grew up in a small town. I got the heck out of town as soon as I could, but I had a different path. Finance, is not my strength. I know it's so important, and I know it's so nuanced talking with people. So if you could maybe peel the onion back a little bit, what is project finance? What, for dummies, if you're explaining it to a five-year-old, what does that mean? And, maybe how has that changed even, throughout your career, or what goes into it? I know regulatory compliance and standards and there's so much others, but maybe you could distill it from your perspective.
Yeah. So when you think about finance, there's really two types. So one is that you're investing in a company. So you're looking at the corporate finance. You're looking at, is the business going to make and sell products on an ongoing basis, right? Whatever that company is that it's doing. The other is an asset, piece of project. So that is much more like if you think about getting a mortgage on your house, the bank is lending you money to buy your house and you're paying that back over time. Project finance is saying, okay, we're going to give you capital to build something and you're going to pay us back over time. Now, the difference between a house and the project is that the project's supposed to make money, right? So whether it's in real estate, you have commercial real estate revenue streams, or in infrastructure like toll road, right? That has projections on how it's going to earn revenue. For renewable energy, you're selling you're building a solar farm or a wind farm or something that is producing energy, actual electrons that are getting plugged into the grid, and there is a payment stream for those electrons, and typically a renewable energy certificate, which is basically a commodity, separately tradable commodity that is different from the electrons themselves. It's the idea that the energy that was created from that site is green, and that is an intangible commodity that can be separately sold. So I can sell my electrons to one person, and I can sell my renewable energy certificates to another. And so a lot of times when you see the big companies that are saying that they're 100% powered by renewable energy, what they're saying is they've bought enough renewable energy certificates to offset the amount of energy that they've used. So
yeah, carbon credits or whatever. Yeah.
So those create financeable revenue streams. And so what you are doing is you're going to get a construction loan, and then you're going to bring in bank debt that is going to finance some portion of the cost of that project. And then you typically have two other kinds of equity investors. So the first kind is your sponsor equity, which is the backup capital, your traditional, they're often sort of funds that exist that are trying to deploy money into long-term assets, maybe even pension funds or, you know, other infrastructure capital. The other more specialized kind of equity is tax equity. And what that means is the project generates tax benefits. People may have heard of the IRA, which extended the tax credits available for renewable energy. Those tax credits they generate so many tax credits, the owner of the project couldn't ever effectively use them. There's not enough tax revenue to offset that credit. And so what you do is you bring in a partner that has tax appetite, that is paying taxes and is looking to offset some of those taxes. Oftentimes, those are insurance companies or banks, but you will see some larger corporates, like Starbucks or Publix I'm kind of thinking about some others. But the idea is that they invest in the project for 5 years. They bring in money on the front end to help pay for building the project, and they stay in the project and they get the tax benefits plus some amount of the revenue stream for a period of 5 years. And then typically at the sixth year, their interest flips. So they own 95% of the project during the first 5 years, and their interest flips, and you can exit them out of the business by buying out their remaining 5% of the ownership stake. And that's how you bring in tax equity. They're not a long-term investor. They're there, you know, as a way to incentivize investment in renewable energy without the government actually writing checks or subsidizing directly the build.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm taking notes as we're talking, and that is helpful to get an overview of how it works. I know there's so much, it's notoriously complicated and difficult. There's a lot that goes into it. I won't go down there. The IRA obviously is a talking point right now, and we're coming up on a United States presidential election in November. If there's a changing of the guard, that could change a lot. It could change very little. Maybe there's enough momentum where it's kind of a moot point. I do know what the regulations are like, even, you know, in Texas. You had mentioned Austin. You know, Governor Abbott, I think, has kind of tightened the regulations on solar and some other things, where even if it's still happening, it seems like it's slowing the process down intentionally. Is there anything that you can think of? Are there opportunities, I guess a better way to ask it, is to reform underwriting and kind of accelerate the financing specifically of solar projects moving forward?
Listen, solar has been encountering resistance, problems, challenges, and drama for the entire 15 years that I've been here. There has never been an easy year. If there was an easy button, this would have been done. You're talking about radically transforming the way that we make and use energy against billions, perhaps trillions of dollars of invested interests. It is crazy to think that you're going to have that much of a disruption without encountering some resistance. And so, you know, the short answer is solar is nimble. It is determined. It has overcome many, many, many obstacles. The path has not been obvious. And that's how you know you're walking down the right one, is it has not been done before. And, you know, I look back on what it costs to build a solar farm somewhere around $6 a watt when I first started. And before you started seeing a lot of the disruptions from, you know, supply chain and interest rate changes and things of that nature, you were seeing regularly prices in the sub-dollar range, like 80 cents a watt.
Is that
That's
right?
That's a huge drop. That happened in a decade.
Wow.
Now, we're not seeing that now. You're going to start to see more of an inflationary environment. You can't count on the cost to build coming down the way that you could historically. But that gives you a picture of what kind of radical transformation is happening. And so, well, the odds are long. They are happening. It's, you know, still the, you know, the highest percentage of new installation is happening in this industry. So, I mean, my answer is like the specifics are going to change. The culture of being nimble and responsive and the commitment that we have. I mean, there's just so much money that is dedicated and committed to deploying into this sector that people will figure it out.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing to hear. I mean, those numbers on the math on that is astronomical, and it makes sense. You know, I'm not a technologist by any way. My wife would laugh, and everyone that knows me would laugh at that. But just to think of a flat screen TV, you know, whatever it was 15, 20 years ago, I mean, it was literally like $10,000. Only millionaires could afford them. And it took six guys to carry it in. And now you can go to Target or Best Buy and buy one for a couple hundred dollars, and they're super lightweight. So it would make sense. Solar panels and green hydrogen and wind and everything else. And now with the storage component of it as well, it's, you know, really a game changer. So now if we can figure out working with utilities and interconnectedness and all sorts of stuff, but that's really interesting to hear. And obviously, yeah, especially with COVID, we've run into supply chain issues, and we're not getting the panels, and we're not getting, you know, this resource. And hopefully once that's resolved, we get back to, you know, sub dollar per kilowatt, you know, benefits and stuff. We're about 30 minutes in. So I would love to talk for another a couple hours, but I also want to be mindful. Where do you see, well, I guess you had mentioned a little bit on kind of what brought you to the clean energy sector. Maybe where do you see it today versus when you started? And then as importantly, or maybe more importantly, you know, what do you see for 3 years out, 5 years out?
Well, when I first started, the only way that you could get capital was if you had a fully de-risked project that had a 20-year power purchase agreement with a utility-grade offtake. That was how you could get something financed. And then slowly over time, they kind of cracked the code on, well, maybe it doesn't have to be 20 years. Perhaps it could be 15 years. And after that, we'll take some merchant risk. And then it became 10 years. And maybe even just 5 years. What if we have a corporate buyer? Okay. Is it have to be a AAA, or can there be some, you know, not even credit rated, because there'd be some kind of shadow rating? There's been an evolution of the willingness to finance different sources of revenue for projects. And the most recent change was the advent of community solar. So community solar opened the door to banks being able to think about, well, there's going to be a customer to buy. We don't need to have a commitment from a single counterparty that we can underwrite. There's enough people who are going to buy this clean energy over the next 20 years that we can count on that. And clean choice is building on the foundation of what community solar began to unlock, because what we are is a retail electric provider. When you think about who you buy your electricity from, most people, I shouldn't say most people, but a lot of people live in areas where it's fully regulated. I'm here in North Carolina. The only business I can buy electricity from is Duke Energy. I don't have a choice in who I buy from.
Yep.
You know, in Texas, you have to choose. There is no default provider. You have to choose who you're going to buy your electricity from. So there's different rules, and that's one of the barriers to growth for the industry. There's federal rules. There's 50 different state rules, plus there's different regional rules for RTOs and ISOs like PJM. But in the states other than Texas that you can choose to buy your electricity from, we operate. So we're on mostly the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast, and we stretch, you know, west into Illinois. So Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, those areas, DC, Maryland. And historically, our company bought energy wholesale, and we sourced renewable energy certificates for our customers that then purchased retail renewable energy. And that helped other companies build new renewable energy projects. When I came to the company, as a part of an investment in a change in the strategy that will allow Clean Choice to own and operate its own renewable energy facilities. So it's a vertical integration. And so we will own projects, and we are locating those projects in areas that best fit our customer load. So last year, we bought 1.5 terawatt hours a year of energy for our customers. We have over 230,000 customers. And one of our limitations to growth is having access to capital to manage the risk around a retail business. And owning assets helps reduce the amount of liquid cash that we have to have in the business, because we're able to instead, if you can think about it, like it's instead of buying energy in an open marketplace, we have an asset that is amortized over a long period of time that is producing and generating that energy on our behalf. So it smooths out what our exposure to the commodity market. And that's the future. Like I really believe that the future of renewables is in having customers. It's not just in driving down the cost of infrastructure. It's actually having a customer relationship and thinking a little bit more deeply about how and where projects are located and what they do as they're interacting with the grid.
That's amazing. And we were talking offline. My family and I live here in Colorado. My kids were watching the Colorado Avalanche. I'm a Chicago fan, but we'll leave that alone. And yeah, so the NHL playoffs are going on right now, and the Avs are playing the Dallas Stars. And sure enough, Clean Choice Energy commercial popped up. It was really enlightening, and it looks like your company is doing really, really important work. So in all sincerity, as a shameless plug for your organization, but in all sincerity, as a consumer, as a citizen of the world, we need to solve this problem. Or, you know, in the next 60, 70 years, or we're all in big trouble. So thank you for the continued important work that your organization's doing. That's great to hear that you came on two-ish years ago as, you know, part to implement change. And it sounds like you're doing so. Are you, I could maybe make an assumption based on how you wrap that up, but what do you see? Are you bullish? Are you bearish on the future? And what can we do to help you and help us as a whole?
You know, I think fundamentally I'm an optimist.
Okay.
You know, so when I look into the future, you can kind of, someone taught me this a long time ago. Your present experience is given to you by the future that you're living into. And so they use the example that you're at home and you're sitting there at work and you've got two tickets to go on vacation. And your experience of life is, yes, life is awesome. And then on the flip side, you're sitting on the beach, you have your Mai Tai, but guess what? You're heading home the next morning and you know you're going to be heading home to a stack of emails that are unread. And your experience of life in that moment, even though you're on the beach drinking a Mai Tai, is not one that is super excited. And so, you know, when I sit here and I look in the future, I just believe that we will find a way forward because that's what people do. And I fundamentally trust in the upward and to the right progression of human evolution. And this is just part of that. So what can folks do to help? I mean, they can lean into listening to their own most true voice. And hopefully that's a path that brings them into clean energy, because we do need your help and your talent.
Amazing. That's probably a good place to wrap up. I, like you, am very optimistic as well. I know there is no easy button, like you had mentioned with solar. If there was, we would have already hit it. And this is complex stuff. This is nuanced things. We're dealing with, you know, not in my backyard. We're dealing with regulations. We're dealing with politicians. We're dealing with money. We're dealing with infrastructure and supply chain and employment and all on everything. And so it is a lot, but it's good to hear that you feel like, you know, somebody that's in the know and a true subject matter expert, that we can get this right. And I'm optimistic, I think, in large part because of the younger generations. I'm in my mid 40s right now, and it just seems like the millennials down really are dialed in. And I think they're doing the right things on a personal basis. But then as they get into leadership roles, they're mindful of everything too. So from big policy changes and also just behavioral changes and habits, I think we're definitely trending in the right direction. We need to speed it up, obviously, because we have a finite amount of time to figure this out. But thank you so much. Gosh, I'd love to invite you back in, you know, 3 months or 6 months and you know, continue the story and maybe have a sub-series or anything like that. That you would find value in. But yeah, I really will link anything you want to the show notes. And yeah, very, very grateful. I know for a fact the audience is going to get so much value. I have like a page and a half of notes myself. So I got to nerd out here, and thank you for that. Any other, I guess, any final thoughts or anything you would like to share with the audience?
No, go outside. Enjoy the day.
There you go. Go outside, enjoy the day. That's excellent advice. Thank you much. Thank you so much, Zoe. And enjoy your afternoon, everyone. And hopefully you are out walking the dog or on a hike and listening to this out in nature. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Renewables Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.